This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Hey gang, welcome to Indie Comic Book Noise, episode 330. I'm Steve Raker in the comic book bunker, along with...
I'm Kevin.
I'm Andrew the LA Rabbit.
And I'm Phil.
Alright guys, and thanks again to Derek Coward for letting us take the reins over of the Indie Comic Book Noise podcast here. And Indie Comic Book Noise is part of Derek's Comic Book Noise family of podcasts and the Deliberate Noise Network. For more info, visit the comicbooknoise.com website or the deliberatenetworknoise.com website.
Who taught you to spoken?
So we're like a bunch of the Marvel Noise guys, right? So check out that bi-weekly podcast. And that's the family show, but here our language can be more frank. And last time around, because it was Halloween and we wanted to get right into the horror comics and Halloween comics that we've loved over the years, we didn't really take the time to introduce ourselves. So I thought this time it would be great if we took a moment to mention how kind of we got into comics and indie comics and the kind of creators and indie comics we kind of dig. So what is your indie comic book noise origin?
All right.
Who wants to go first?
Kevin?
I was okay at the beginning. That's the thing you got to remember. Like, I was reading my Marvel comics, but I had my indie comics on the side, like my Valiant video game stuff and the black and white Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, as well as my Archies and all that type of stuff. And at some point, I became a Marvel zombie. And that went on for a while, and then you get into being a Marvel DC zombie a bit. And then I guess at some point your superhero comics aren't doing it as much for you, or you want more variety, and you're like, oh, the same writer that's on one of my Marvel books is on one of the indie books, and you read reviews online, and they tell you, oh, these books are just as good, if not better. So then you get into something like Powers, and then you just keep the train rolling there, and you start trying out all this different crazy stuff.
I've been podcasting with Kevin for how many years now, and I now know more about you than ever before.
All right!
Than I've learned in the previous 5 years.
It's true. It was a joke on Marvel Noise that no one's ever seen what he looks like.
Unless it's at 12 DPI.
If it's a camera from 1997.
Well, how I got into comics was I was given comics by a parent's friend and then a box from a cousin back in the early 70s as a four-year-old in 1974. So that makes me an old man of 43. So that's where I'm coming from, and comics taught me to read before kindergarten, and in that first box amongst the Silver Age stuff from the Big Two was, some Charlton stuff, some Harvey comics, and some Thunder Agents. They were probably my first real challenge to the characters of the Big Two in the indie world as a young kid, and they did a fine job of it, because I was very into and still really enjoy the Thunder Agents when they pop up here and there.
Are you reading, as a short segue, I want to get back to it, but are you enjoying, my first exposure is actually the new IDW series, and I'm really enjoying it. I think they just had their third issue.
Phil Hester and art by Andrea DeVito. And yes, this is a good incarnation of the Thunder Agents, better than the ones that DC came up with in the, over the last decade, I think. And I really have been enjoying them, too. It kind of brings things back to some of the real basics, and I'm definitely digging it. The art's good.
Yeah, and it works for people who don't know the Thunder Agents, because I never read them before.
I've never read them either, so that's a... I'll have to start there then. So
yeah, I still have the first issue on the stack for me to read, but I remember at Fan Expo, they had some of the old, I guess it was archives or collections or something for like $25, and
ooh.
I'm like, should I buy those or not?
Well, now I think they actually or either solicited or have come out with some soft cover versions, too. So there's a lot of different ways to get reprints of that old stuff. But the old stuff is really good. It's mostly Wally Wood and Steve Ditko drawn stuff from back in the late 60s. So it's definitely quality stuff, and the characters are interesting, and I really do like this new incarnation. Dynamo was supposed to be a jerk. I mean, he was a criminal, and he's kind of, because he's a rough, tough bruiser type, he's the one who can take the power of this power belt and not immediately turn to ash when the thing turns on, and instead actually, get bulked up by it and empowered. So he becomes their, neither want each other, but the match is right. So the belt works for him, and he kind of is slowly becoming a hero here as he meet all the other agents kind of through his eyes, and it's pretty good. Like I said, Andre DeVito, so that's pretty first class art right there. You know, the Iron Maiden's going to be drawn well. Anyone who can draw Iron, in feminine form it's going to turn out well. So for the Thunder Agents in the late 1970s, I found my dad had about half a dozen of the first dozen or so of heavy metal, and that I found those like in his study when I'm like 7 or 8 or 9 or something like that. And so those had like the Richard Corbin Den stuff in it, and some of that early heavy metal stuff that started to blow my mind as far as some of the indie world beyond superhero big two stuff. We went to the Canadian Rockies in the late 70s also, when I was about 7 or 8. And right at that time we were in Alberta, and I was picking up different comics to read at different shops that we would stop into, just picking up bags of like old Gold Key comics or whatever. But I came upon Richard Comley's comics, the Captain Canuck comics. And funny enough that after Comley drew them, George Freeman, who ended up doing a lot of work for Marvel and some independent stuff as well, did some good artwork for Captain Canuck, and I even have a hardcover of some of that stuff just because it's nostalgic to me. So my golden age was like the early 80s, late 70s, and that's the rise of all of those, of independent comic shops and of indie, publishers like Pacific and Eclipse and First Comics, Marvel's Epic Illustrated, and all the Jim Starlin stuff. And fortunately, I had a local comic shop, Fantico, that carried all the indie stuff and put them on the racks right next to the comic books. I discovered fandom for the first time through some of Fred Hembeck's publications through Fantico, and pretty much was on the ride at that point. When I got out of comics in high school, I turned to the ripoff press and got into R. Crumb and Gilbert Shelton's underground stuff, the Fabulous Furry Freak Brothers and Fat Freddy's Cat and all that good stuff. Definitely comics out there for you, regardless of your frame of mind or stage of cultural or emotional or intellectual development, that's for sure.
Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, so I don't know. In the 80s or in the 90s, I didn't really jump with the artists and go over to Image because the properties didn't really interest me that much. Although in hindsight, around 2001 or so, I went back and I read all of the Savage Dragons. I think they were up to like issue 50 at that point.
I love Savage Dragon. That's totally one series. That's like, you know those series that you spend all that time trying to get every issue, like wherever you can, and you back bin you find, like
that's what I did.
That was what that and Legion are my main series that I've done that with and had the most fun doing it. So took years to
I'm
get
reading Savage Dragon to this day through the clunky political stuff and when Larson was spending too much time,
he has some phases.
Yeah, well, he was split between being a publisher, at the time, and trying to put out his book. So the book came out sporadically, and then it was really, like I said, I thought kind of naively politically weighted, and But now it's back to being really cool, and we're getting this march towards issue number 200 and this big turnaround where his kiddo is finally taking the reins of the book, and Old Man Dragon is probably going to go off to the third star on the right and straight on till morning.
Mm-hmm. For the second time?
Exactly.
Well, the third or fourth, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't know, like even the miniseries, the tie-in series, everything's so cool about that world, I find.
The 90s did have other cool indie books that I liked, though. Companies that, again, rose and fall, like Innovation. They had the Hero Alliance, and they did Piers Anthony's On a Pale Horse, all painted. They did Anne Rice adaptations of her Vampire Lestat, and Interview with the Vampire, mm-hmm. and Queen of the Damned, and The Mummy. And then, like, in the 2000s, I think really the indie book that I've read the most, if you can count, I don't know if you can count, like, Planetary as a true indie book, but that was one of my favorite comic series of all times, but was Marvel lost the Conan license to Dark Horse, so I pretty much read anything Conan since I was a kid, pretty much, so... I'm still following along with that stuff, and although I've not really dug the Brian Wood Conan series of the last 21 issues or so, just don't like that interpretation of him as much as the others I've read. I'm really digging the Tim Truman, Thomas Giorello, King Conan limited series, is the third of which actually just finished up this past week. That stuff is incredible to look at.
I find the one-shots and miniseries are usually really good for Conan. That's the stuff I enjoy the most.
I'm usually the opposite. I need some continuing subplots or something brewing there. Yeah. Otherwise, sometimes it gets a little one-note.
I'm a big Conan fan, too, but I'm more of a Red Sonja fan.
Oh, sure.
I've read, I've gotten all the omnibuses for that. I found the first three I've really enjoyed a lot. I kind of wish Dark Horse had that license too, though, because I know they'd even do a better job.
Absolutely. And
it could cross over with Conan again, you know?
Although, give it time, because now with Gail Simone writing it, maybe there'll be some depth again and some direction to some of the storytelling, because it got really weird there over the last probably 2 or 3 years, I think. It's gotten directionless.
I haven't tried her stuff yet, but I am excited to.
It's like on issue 3 or 4, so it's just it's a new beginning. Mm-hmm. With a writer who can write.
Yeah. Who, unfortunately, we don't see that much anymore. Really. She doesn't work on too many books these days.
You know, the only other book that's a big one that I think of that comes to mind, because I did almost the same thing as I did with Savage Dragon. This time I did it when it was reaching issue 100, and everyone always said how good it was, and I was like, yeah, and when am I going to ever jump in? Then I got this rock in my head, and I was out of work, and I'm sitting around, and was able to sit around and read, and I jumped into and read the first 100 issues of Robert Kirkman's Invincible. And don't you know, that's a slam, bang, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, fun book, too. And reading a big chunk like that, the plot points just kept hitting the beats, boom, 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 for 100 issues. It was really a fantastic ride, and I feel really
invested.
It's still great,
too.
Yeah, I feel really invested in the book now, for sure.
And that's great, reading in a big chunk like that. That's definitely a good book for that.
You can see all the character development of all the different plot lines going along.
Mm-hmm.
So how about you? What's your indie comic book origin?
How am I going to stand up to you with the four words I know? Well, I always collected indie comics. I've been collecting comics since I'm 4 years old, like you. And for me, when I really got into indie comics, though, was when Image first started. I started going to a new store where if you ordered through previews, you would get American prices. So my dad, he was never into comics at all, but for some reason his favorite thing was taking me to the comic store every week. And he'd say, okay, here's $200, go through previews and pick whatever you want. And so that's when I first started looking at all the indie comics.
Hey, Andrew, remember when American prices were the advantageous ones?
It's a big difference, I'm telling you. Like, me and Kevin have paid some ridiculous prices. Like, we used to pay like $10 more on a trade.
Oh, man, it was terrible. It was $5 or $5.25 for a single issue.
Yeah, it's disgusting. Like, It's horrible. And yeah, so I started doing that, and so I'd flip through previews, and I just saw these new amazing type of books I never imagined before, because it was just pretty much superhero stuff for me then. And I would just pick out anything. I don't care if it was issue 2 or 3, like weird titles like Anarchy, stuff you guys probably never even heard of. I couldn't tell you what company. It's like one of those companies where they put out one comic and they disappear, you know? Got a lot of stuff like that. Yeah, exactly. Like The Walking Dead, you know? And so I just started doing that, and then I like things like horror movies and stuff like that, like even at a young age. So obviously indie's kind of more my wheelhouse, more the adult themes. And I never had any rules as a kid, so I can get whatever I want. Doesn't matter if it's a titty book or whatever, you know? Nice. So yeah, after that, I just started getting indie comics. Ones I enjoy today, like God, I have a horrible memory.
Well, that's why there'll be a lot of episodes of this show to spread spread it all out.
But yeah, like I even read weird stuff like Xenoscope, which I know is everyone thinks is a pretty stupid company, but that's kind of my guilty pleasure. But I'm everywhere on the map. Like I'll try anything except for Top Shelf. That doesn't really go with me too much.
Now, I love big art books and coffee table books and all that kind of stuff. I've got bookshelves and bookshelves full of big art hardcovers and stuff. I just love art. And I just got, speaking of Xenoscope, I just got their like slipcase art of Xenoscope hardcover. Yeah. Nice. And quite a presentation.
Yeah, I have a bad addiction though. Like I buy the issues, the trades. Like it's horrible, and I don't even enjoy it anymore.
But that proves you're a comic book fan.
I just have to have them. It's horrible.
Otherwise, he has an obsessive disorder, which comics seems to encourage.
Yeah, I do. I do have that collector's mentality for sure. Where, like, if I don't have every issue, something I can't read it. Like I can't. I don't care if I'm missing one issue. I have to have everything. And until I get that one issue, I'll go crazy, and like my head will just spin. I'm a weirdo, but yeah, I guess that's my origin. I like titty books. Andrew,
and you were encouraged to buy them.
Yeah.
Boy, it's tough to follow up. I like titty books.
I had to follow up after Steve. This would be easy.
I started out somewhat like I'm of a similar age of Steve, but a bit younger. And I started on the got to get my digs in when I can't. I started on the Marvel and Batman and that sort of stuff. But two things sort of opened up my eyes, I would say. The first one would be the explosion of independent comics in the 80s. I'm going to guess that it was probably the Elric adaptions from First.
Nice.
That got my attention. But it could very well be like the Airboy from Eclipse. I don't remember what dates those were at, but those were some of the first. And then once you start reading one title from the company, you look to the other ones, and then it goes on from there. So I really was enjoying that. And then my other memory has to do with I visited my older brother in the big city of Syracuse, New York, which was a big city compared to where I'm from, which should tell you what sort of one horse podunk town I come from. And he took me to a comic book store, which was a pretty rare treat because when I was a little kid, we didn't have any in my hometown. That only came when I got into high school, maybe middle school. And he bought a Fat Freddy's Cat comic book.
Nice.
And I thought that was pretty cool. So every time now I go and I have the little omnibus that came out and I've bought all them issues and everything. And I think they're great comics, but it also is that sort of pleasant association with that time. Nothing like any sort of nostalgic-based economy.
Nothing like reading a strip where one of the panels is a little steaming pile of dew in somebody's leather shoe.
Yes. My favorite had to be where he craps in Fat Freddy's headphones.
Oh, yeah, I just looked it up, and the first one I brought up, he's crapping and stuff. I guess it's it all crap humor.
It's not all, like, he's, the rub of it is he's a lot more sophisticated than his oafish owner, Fat Freddy.
So he craps everywhere?
So well, as sort of his only way to get back, even though there's this disparity of intellect, there's a power imbalance, and that is Fat Freddy sort of is his boss in a way.
Right. Right. All he can do is wave his balls at him and shit in his shoe. And it used to be just a gag. Like, it would be a one, it would be like a four panel strip at the bottom of a one page comic of the Fabulous Furry Freak Brothers. So it was almost like a little extra bonus little gag at the bottom. And then it kind of caught on, and they've collected those strips and then came, you know, with longer narratives as well over time.
Nice.
Yeah, the one of the classic long narratives is this great when the Freak Brothers leave and the building is sprayed for bugs. So all the roaches descend on their apartment, which already has a pretty healthy roach population. So there's a giant roach war, and each of the different roach communities has different ideologies based on their respective locations of kitchen and living room. Anyways, it's a thoroughly silly comic book that is lots of fun, but again, not for the little kids, because there's lots of drug references, sex, scatological. It's a little bit less than the Freak Brothers themselves, you know.
Yep, definitely. But he still eats his pot plants sometimes, you know.
Yeah. But
I haven't bought the hardcover omnibuses just for that reason. Like, do I really want my kids to find these on the shelf, you know?
No.
My heavily read, you know, square-bound trade paperback that's, you know, the spine is so mushed up from being read time and time again and even taped back together that it can't even see what it is, you know, from the spine, I think kind of gives it the stealth quality that is required in my household.
Well, the other problem is, I'll be honest with you, I don't think they're particularly well-made collections as far as the print quality and everything. I was a little bit disappointed when I got them. I had them on my kind of wish list on Amazon for a while and finally bit the bullet. But I felt like, oh, they really could have, it really should have gotten nicer treatment than it ended up getting. So if they ever redo them in a bit cleaned up, nicer format, I'll definitely look at upgrading mine.
Digital.
Oh, digital, you people and your digital. But anyway, like anybody that has half a brain, at some point you stop reading comic books. And mine came through a combination of mostly lack of finances, but also some significant life changes. But the one book that sort of kept me, once in a while when I'd stick my head in a comic book store, the one book I would look for is Martial Law, which has the distinction of having been published by just about every company I can think of.
Along with Elric, so the circle comes back around.
So it started with Marvel's Epic imprint. It's been at Dark Horse. DC just printed the omnibus, you know, Top Shelf was going to print it. It's been all over the place.
And it had crossovers with Lobo, The Mask, and Hellraiser, which is awesome.
Savage Dragon as
well.
And
Savage Dragon, yes. That's right.
So I was, that's kind of the comic that kept me in comics. And then around that time, a friend of mine let me know that the talented and attractive Fred Van Lente had broken into the big two and had created a new Scorpion character that was in Amazing Fantasy. And so that led me to the comic book store, and I started buying those and buying other books and getting back into the hobby. And then I'd have to credit my time with the comic book community with also invigorating my hobby. I don't know that I would be reading as much comics if it wasn't for the Twitter, the forums, the podcasts. All these things not only expose me to new books, but they also give me a sort of heightened sense of what to look for. now I would say I've tried to move away from a lot of floppies and into trade. And the one place I still buy a lot of floppies is from creators themselves. I'm big into self-published books. I was just at Kamikaze, the Los Angeles Pop Culture Convention that was recently here in LA for 3 days. And I bought a bunch of books right from the creators. And so those, you really can't wait. I mean, you can, but if you trade weight on a lot of self-published stuff, you're probably going to be waiting forever. But it's really fun to kind of meet the creators and see their growth. And some of these books have interesting origins. Like, you gentlemen might remember the Image book, Reed Gunther.
Yes. Sure.
Absolutely.
That ran. Well, we had actually started reading it when they were self-publishing it under their own imprint. So it was pretty exciting, you know, when suddenly you talk to them and they're like, oh, yeah, we got picked up by Image. We're going to move the product there. So it's, you know, some of the thrill and interest in the hobby grows that way, too. So I'd really recommend that people sort of look outside their realm, particularly if you're not. It's a great way to get non-comic book readers involved. My wife is very tolerant about going to these things, but she's a reader, so I was able to get her into comics by finding comics that's interesting. It's just a genre. Like, if they're into whatever they're into, there's a comic book for mystery, romance, spies. Like, superheroes dominate the genre, but that's far and away the smaller group of it.
If you want to read about zombie lawmen,
yeah,
there's Zeke Deadwood for you. That did end up being available on Comixology, by the way,
for 99 cents.
the thing that's really cool about going with her is she is completely oblivious to labels. So it's really fun going through Small Press and Artist Alley because she is completely judging the books on what's interesting. And I try and do that, but I have my, you know, I've been reading comics for a long time, so I have inherent prejudices about certain companies or whatever. But for her, it's fun to be with her because she'll be like, oh, does this look good? Does it look interesting? And she doesn't have any kind of, you know, some publishers we know have reputations or whatever, but that's all not influencing her decision. So it's helped invigorate me as a collector that way. So I think I will always be an indie comic book reader. I can see a time when I might stop reading Marvel or DC or Image or that stuff, but I think I'll always have an interest in independent comics.
Did you, Steve and Kevin, did you guys ever quit comics at some point in your life?
No.
Me neither.
I've read less comics at different points in time. Like, say, mid to late 90s, I wasn't reading as many, and then the price was escalating too. And then came back to it more heavy as time went on and got into more stuff.
My first year of high school was also Secret Wars 2. And I was like, later. It was sex, drugs, and rock and roll for a while. Although, you know, within that came, at that time, I did pick up the Bernie Wrightson Frankenstein that came out during that time. And like I said, I was reading the Underground comics. Other than that, no, I was out of it for about 5 years there.
Wow. And how long were you out, Andrew?
I would have bailed sometime in the 90s, maybe 93-ish, and got back in around 2003.
Oh, wow. That was big. That's a big...
I mean, like I said, I would pop in and buy one or two books, but I'm not... I don't consider buying, you know, a couple books a year, any kind of collecting or anything. That's more... Now I got back into it now. Long boxes and short boxes and drawer boxes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I've never quit, so I have too many comics.
It's not really that bad of a problem to have.
It is when there's a lot you'll never reread again. And it's just taking up space, I find.
It's reference. If you need that obscure issue of something, it's there.
I can just look it up on the internets.
I suppose the internets are always there. Like,
there's a lot of stuff that I would keep, obviously, because I reread it, but there's, I don't know, there's things I've picked up, like, maybe in the 25-cent bin or something, you know, that are just useless.
Just push it off to another day, you know? If you don't have progeny to pass them along to, it'll make a fun retirement hobby to figure out what to do with them, you know?
Yeah.
I just don't have enough space here. So it creates, you know, logistical issues because I just don't have the room to store them. I really wish I could get into digital and then I could cut loose my attachment to paper.
Well, that's what I have to do now for the most part. And then I buy trades for a lot of things because – when I move my comics, when I move somewhere, it costs me like $1,000 to hire a moving truck because it's that bad. Like, it's ridiculous. So I'm forced to buy digital now because I got to control my collection. And I'm sure, Steve, yours is getting out of control.
Yep. Definitely.
Yeah, but he has a whole bunker, though, so he can – boxes and boxes and just tons of stuff you can put there.
I have three floors. I got lots of space, but it's – the problem is it's just – It takes a whole living room.
They're periodicals. That's the problem.
You just want to have other things in your house than comic books.
Yeah, like a wife.
long boxes wives. Make good benches.
good beds.
None of my friends will ever help me move again. That's why I have to hire people too.
I'd help you, but you might have to check your inventory pretty closely, Phil.
You can have
them. I carried every one of my long boxes when we moved into this house. I was from my parents' attic. I was determined to not put that burden on anybody.
Yeah.
Well, I'm moving to short boxes. I'm screwing up my back with these. I got some drawer boxes, and they're just too... Whenever I move them around, I really got to be, you know, when, you know, I lift them the wrong way or whatever, it throws my back out for the rest of the day.
That's a lot of paper. That's a lot of book.
Hashtag old people.
So you got some pics.
Hey, you better believe it. You'll be lucky if you live this long. Every time I open one of those, I end up getting breaking my hip.
I only buy short boxes now.
Got any current pics of things you've been reading?
How about some Samurai Jack?
Boo.
Oh. You're going to be down on the Jack?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't get into it.
I never watched the car. I watched the Powerpuff Girls was about the same time, right?
Yeah. Some of those cartoons were really creative around that era because they would have, like, silent sequences or, you know, not a lot of reoccurring characters or, I don't know, just something about them, like, they took some chances on what's basically a kid's cartoon.
And the comic came before the cartoon or after?
After. Because I think...
It lives on in the comics.
Yeah, I guess it was DC. I guess that would make sense because, you know, Warner Brothers and then Cartoon Network, they published something before. But it's now moved on to IDW, where they're publishing... Powerpuff Girls. What's the other one?
My Little Pony.
Yes, My Little Pony.
When I was at the IDW panel, it was, you know, they talk about the artist edition as the first 15 minutes, but like 75% of the questions were My Little Pony questions. That book has really paid off. They mentioned they've sold their millionth copy from the franchise. They have all these limited series and this, that, and the other thing. Like, it really is this juggernaut. I think you're going to see pretty much every license they can get their hands on, Strawberry Shortcake, whatever they can find, because, you know, you don't get lightning but that a few times.
That's the problem I'm having with IDW right now, though, because I love them, but now they're just, like, totally draining all these properties. Like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I love that book, but there's so many different series they put out. Like, they're really... I don't know. I find they're putting out too many books for each property they get, and it's turning into like Dynamite a bit too. I
was gonna say I don't think they're as bad as Dynamite.
No, definitely not. But
they're even doing some comics of those characters from the Rocky and Bullwinkle shorts, like why can't I remember
Sherman with and Peabody?
Yes, Sherman and Peabody with their time machine and everything. So I'm like, I really hope that's gonna be good because that could be pretty cool. At least what I remember from the cartoon.
I'd read a couple issues of that.
If someone revealed to me that Dynamite and IDW shared office space on the same floor like down the hall from each other in the same building, I wouldn't be that surprised.
No, me neither.
I wouldn't be someone. I mean, IDW doesn't Dynamite a lot, and I read a bunch of Dynamite books. I feel a lot of times they do that trick where they have a nice cover and kind of silly insides.
Right.
But I feel like IDW, you kind of get what, well, like the Thunder Agents book we mentioned.
Yeah, that's good.
Like they do a lot of licenses, but
they're
also
good quality.
Seem to,
they're good
to have quality.
Yeah.
Yeah. And their collections are certainly some high quality stuff too. Yeah.
Both companies.
And there's a lot of stuff I still enjoy, like the Doctor Who's, things like that. I just think like I don't need four Doctor Who books a month or whatever, you know.
They both put out good oversized like the art books and stuff that I cherish so much.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure.
I should mention it's by Jim Zub and Andy Sora. Oh, I'm going to butcher his name. Sorano? I don't know. And he worked on the show. So it's not like it's some like random dude, you know, coming in here and you're like, oh, I hope this guy's good.
It's legit.
Yeah.
He worked on the Doc Bizarro comic.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really? But anyways, it's pretty cool. It makes a use of a lot of things like the cartoon. Like they're not afraid to use like all the colors. Like when they're going through the desert, you have a lot of reds and yellows. And then as you get into like caves and other places, they're using like bright blues, purples, reds, and greens. But I had an interesting dilemma with Samurai Jack because I was just like, I don't know how this is going to translate to a comic. Because a TV series, it can do like silence for like 12 minutes of a 24-minute cartoon, and the length of the cartoon is always going to stay the same. But if like if you have a silent comic, like I could read in like 2 minutes or something. So it's like, if you want it to be 20 minutes and there's only enough for 2 minutes, it's like, how do you trans like that so you're still getting enough content?
Especially you, who's running a stopwatch.
Well, yeah, you know, I don't know how I became the stopwatch guy. I guess I blame the internet because they make you like hyper aware of price and everything. But I think this worked out fine. Like they have some like cinematic moments and everything. And then I kind of wonder if the comic's going to get more innovative like the cartoon was. Like they'll try, I don't know, like all these different like tricks where they'll have, I don't know, like a backwards issue, an upside down issue, or like four panels. Like each panel would be like at a different time and then you would read it differently. Or I don't know. I kind of expect them to be allowed to try something different. But I enjoyed the first issue, and it's just like a basic quest, and it gets a bit cosmic. So I'm like, oh, this is pretty interesting. And then you get into some of the cool villains. And what I really liked about the cartoon, too, and the comic's going to do is you didn't have a lot of reoccurring villains. So they're like constantly creating new stuff, and you're always having new visuals. And since they covered like every genre, you might like have Samurai Jack trying to stop a farting dragon, and then you would come back next week and you would have like a crime noir story. So you can pretty much do anything. So then when you get to the villains, like you get these mechanical dudes, or you get gangsters or like intergalactic hunters. So in this issue, they're like all sort of based on someone. So you get like this cactus man. And then you get this dude who's like the best at what he does. And I'm thinking, oh, that's obviously a Wolverine guy. And then they even, in martial arts, like they have all these cool names for stuff. And they sort of have that fun in the issue too, where someone will say, oh, this is the significant fist. Or the immature of the Robotinsky, the butt blaster. like just really funny stuff while they're trying to tell their story. So I see a lot of potential, and I'm going to continue on with this, and hopefully it's just going to get more crazy as it goes on.
It was Doc Bizarre was the comic. Sorry, I had that wrong. I was confusing him with Bizarro.
Oh, yes, you did say Bizarro, didn't you?
Yeah.
Joe Casey wrote it.
Oh, I do have that. Yes.
I have the hardcover. I just couldn't remember the title off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think the Bizarro threw me off. But yeah, I do have that one.
Is there really a fart dragon?
Yeah, one of the cartoons had a farting dragon, yeah.
Okay, I'll read it.
He's not in this issue. Like, this issue has the butt blaster guy.
I'll read it then, dude.
Like, it totally goes from immature to serious, like, very easily.
Just like we do.
Apparently. I really wanted to, like, see more Samurai Jack stories, because I love that cartoon. But part of me knows, I'm like, am I just going to read this and go, well, that took 2 minutes? So I, like, did a flip test, sadly, and I'm, like, counting words. I'm like, is there enough words in this comic?
I thought
I'm
you
like,
were going to...
That's going to make the comic better.
I thought you were going to talk about Velvet, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I could, yeah.
How was that?
That's another good book.
Let's make him. How was it? I didn't get it yet.
It's pretty much like S.H.I.E.L.D. and Captain America, but like in a real world. Like if you enjoyed those stories,
well, that's my
Winter
problem.
Soldier,
that's my problem. Is I find I read it too because I thought that's because I thought you mentioned something, so I figured you were gonna cover it. But I find he needs to try something different, Brubaker. Like he's just writing the same stuff over and over to me. Like,
but he's really good at that. Like
but try something else.
I don't know, because when he's tried other things before, it hasn't felt as right, but he's really good at what he's like, what he's into and everything. So I'm like, you see the first page of Velvet, and then you see the guy in like a tuxedo and the tie, and I'm totally thinking like James Bond and everything, and it totally gets into that time period. And since it's like 50s, 60s, 70s, you don't have to worry about like modern tech that would destroy part of the story. Yeah, but I think I'm in the Bond mood since I saw Skyfall and everything like that, so this sort of ties in with that type of stuff and genre.
I wouldn't say real world, but it certainly is evocative of his other work. If you liked if you like that combination doing spy stuff, you should like this because it's very similar.
I mean, more real world than some superhero type of thing.
It's still pretty fanciful, but
well, you know, Hollywood action and stuff like that,
which is again not the barrier for reality. Either.
No, but you know,
I want fanciful.
It works. It's fun, and the art is pretty unreal from Epting. So, you know, it's like he's gone to like another level. It seems like
as a toll booth stop on the route to the hardcover, I want to mention is Sergio Aragonés from Mad Magazine fame does his funnies, Sergio Aragonés funnies for Boom. And I don't know, I think it's about on issue 9 or 10 right now. And what's neat about them is they're all little strips. Some are, each issue has maybe 3 or 4 multi-page strips and then a bunch of one-page gags. And they're not really kids' fare. There are a lot of stories, like, they make you feel like you're hanging out with Sergio for an hour when you're reading it.
I thought that was Bongo.
Yeah, isn't it Bongo?
It's Bongo.
It is Bongo. It's The Simpsons. No, you're right. You're right. But thank you for the correction. But they feel like you're hanging out with Sergio for a while when you're reading him. He's telling stories about his childhood, like when he got into like puppetry, when he jumped on a train and went to another town and didn't have any money, when he walked onto a set of and was an extra on like a famous movie, when he accidentally killed Marty Feldman, all these different weird things. And Sergio obviously has led a pretty interesting life, and growing up in Mexico has a different kind of a youth than, I experienced. So I really appreciate his point of view and hearing his different stories and stuff. And I'm really happy that it's not necessarily an all ages kids fair type book on that front. Go ahead.
I will let people know, too. There, the delay in the book was his health problems. I think it's bad. The last two issues have been back on time. So if you got turned off, they were really rare at San Diego. Sergio mentioned that this was like his first time in the hospital ever getting the hip done. So,
yeah, because I picked up an issue maybe 3 or 4 like a while ago, and I'm like, it's only on issue 9. I just thought, what is? I just assumed it was a quarterly book or something.
No, and those are available digital too, and they look real pretty, all nicely colored and everything. It's not colored like his Gru stuff was colored, where like the whole background they'd have to do big swashes of one color and that kind of a thing. It's really well crafted. Along those lines is Mad's Greatest Artists is a series of oversized hardcovers that Running Press has been putting out. And several years ago, I bought the big two-volume slipcase Don Martin, complete Don Martin book when it was on one of those ridiculous like Amazon or Barnes & Noble goof sales where it's like I got it for like $16 and it's like a $250 double slipcase hardcover thing. But since then, they've backed off from that presentation, and now there's a much more affordable package. They've come out with two in the last couple of years. The most recent one was just last month, and the two are Sergio Aragonés and Dave Berg. And these are oversized hardcover, almost 300 pages each, and they're priced at $30. So, you know, through Amazon or DCBS or in stock trades, you can get them for a lot cheaper. But to get, you know, five decades of the lighter side of this and a mad look at that in this type of package that's affordable but still oversized and a beautiful hardcover is totally awesome. So look for those mad greatest artist hardcovers. $30 cheap.
I picked up the Mad Artist Edition when it was on sale for $90, which is the first six issues, I want to say. Steve, did you get that one?
No, I didn't, but, I mean, that's the old classic.
You have to be an agent of Mad for Dr. Claw to read Mad?
The usual gang of idiots.
Yeah, ain't that the truth.
But those were my guys, Don Martin, Dave Berg, Al Jaffe, Sergio Aragonés. I'm waiting for the snappy answers to stupid questions one. Yeah. That'll be great.
I was never much of a Mad person. I don't know. It's sort of like looking at like Wizard magazine back in the day, and they would have an indie comic section, and you would go, "How ugly!" And for some reason, that made me not want to be involved. I don't know. It's just weird thing where I'm just like, "Oh, that can't be good. That's like ugly artwork or weird artwork or something." I don't know. I just remember they had that column in Wizard. It was like Palmer's Picks or something. And I'm like, I got to make sure I don't read anything that's in this column.
See, I had a subscription to Mad as a kid in the 70s, and that was the high time of the magazine because it was when all the spinoffs came, right? You had Cracked spinoff, and Marvel did its crazy spinoff. National Lampoon was in its heyday. Mad Magazine was at the top of the pyramid, though.
Yeah, I loved them. I don't think I was old enough to really understand some of the stuff, but I definitely enjoyed a lot of things like Spy vs. Spy or the superhero parodies, things like that. Sergio was, I loved his little cartoons on the bottom of the page, the little tiny ones, you know?
Definitely.
I think I told you guys I had just been to Kamikaze, and I was cruising through Artist Alley and noticed that the creator who I'd purchased the first issue from had issues 2 through 4. So I had to go gobble them up because I liked the first issue. And the comic I'm talking about is from Brew House Comics. Are you boys familiar with that label?
No. No, I don't think so.
Well, maybe the title will ring a clue. Bigfoot, Sword of the Earthman.
No.
All right. Well, as I said, I picked up the first issue and kind of liked it. It's they got the first four done. I'm only through halfway through the third issue because I just got these a few days ago and work's been crazy and everything. But I really like it. It's one of those books that I feel like you really get a lot out of each issue. I haven't done a page count or anything like that. I normally don't. But going by feel of reading it and immersing myself in the world, it feels like a lot. And the inside cover sort of gives you the update. But basically, it's some futuristic world. And it's a pretty unpleasant world that's sort of in barbarian-style times with all sorts of strange aliens. And there's a threat, these kind of insect-like vampire creatures that come out at night. And they have this way to combat them through this flame, because the creatures are kind of like moths and they're attracted to the flame. So in the outpost, they staff these things with essentially what are the equivalent of work camps, sort of like the French Foreign Legion prison camps. So it would not be out of place to say something like a gladiator sort of mashup meets aliens. So, you know, it's a lot of swords and spears, but it's all these prisoners stuck out in this godforsaken outpost fighting these creatures. And the Earthman doesn't speak. He's kind of looks like a Bigfoot creature. And he's paired with a scribe sidekick who recognizes that the Earthman has this something about him that's useful. So he sort of tied his fortunes to him. And the scribe is very vociferous. So it's kind of the funny pairing of like the strong, silent guy and the short, chatty guy. And the chatty guy always goes on and on. So it's a lot of those sort of familiar dynamics. But the world really is its own place. With all these crazy creatures, and I kind of like the color palette's kind of soft, and it's just a great book. Let me get some credits for you. They have their last names on the cover, but they don't have where they attributed. Like I said, I had the first issue and picked up 2 through 3. Written by Josh Henneman, line art by Andy Taylor, color by Thomas Bonvillain. It's like a Bond villain, but it's a Bond villain.
Consensual continuity.
So if you kind of like a Conan or maybe Planet Hulk or something with like maybe Savage Sword, something with weird characters, but and in a completely different reality, this
sounds
would be
awesome.
Fun, but it's like a basic. And it was just one of those books you get, one of those indie books you get that you like. And then when you see that they're going on, because one of the downsides of buying self-published books is sometimes they just stop. And sometimes that's after issue one. So, like, I'm glad they're getting some traction. I think I've heard of this in other places. I don't know. But if any of that sounds up your alley, Bigfoot, Sword of the Earthman is for you. The interesting thing is they are digital. You can get the first issue for 99 cents. The website is www.bigfootcomic.com. Nice. So if you like digital, you can check the first issue out for 99 cents. Like I said, I'm trying to get into digital, but I'm sadly into paper, like some sort of pathetic old man.
Well, I prefer paper too. Like,
yeah, same here.
I enjoy, like, if I read a comic on paper, I'll enjoy it more than on my iPad. But
especially if you're going to get a digital code and a comic for the same price, why wouldn't I pick up the print comic?
The paper is barely paper these days, though.
This comic sounds awesome, so I have to go to their website to get it?
I don't know who's distributing it or whatever, but because they do have online retailers at their website, they say.
Bigfoot, so you can't comic. Get the paper can't get copy. Much easier than that.
But, yeah, I like this. I don't know what else Brewhouse Comics is doing. I have a sneaking suspicion this might be the entire output. But it's a great, like, so far I'm through 2.5 issues and I'm really enjoying it. And like I said, unlike some of those sort of sparse books, I think the world is sufficiently developed to allow me to linger on some of the pages and kind of get into it. I mean, it is a self-published book, or published through a small press, I guess I should say, technically. So,
whoa.
Oh, we lost him.
Uh-oh.
Bigfoot. Sasquatch.
I had the perfect segue,
It's probably gang-related. He's in LA. You know, you guys are going to make me broke because everything you guys have been talking about, I've been buying. Like, I got all the 8 Seals.
Oh, cool.
Now I'm going to get Samurai Jack and this other book he's talking about.
All right. So why don't you tell us about that next book there, Kevin, and we'll see if Andrew reappears from the ether.
All right. You know what else has Bigfoot, guys?
What?
A comic from Monkey Brain called Strange Nation Number 1.
Oh, I told you to tell me if you were reading any Monkey Brain comics.
I know this is the one I sort of hinted at. I was like, oh, it's kind of...
Well, I'll just read your cryptic messages then. And
well, I thought you only get the...
Because I have that one. I
thought you only get the print Monkey Brain stuff.
No, because there were so many new number ones, I decided to get them all.
Oh, I did not know this.
Yeah.
We got a better coordinate in the future. But this is kind of...
the one that hit with you the most out of all the new number ones.
I find I buy a lot of them, but I haven't got around to reading a lot of them, so they're just sort of like they're piling up. And this was just like a number one and one issue to read, so it was easier for me to get to.
Mm-hmm.
But this was kind of, I don't know, maybe if you're into like Bigfoot and conspiracies and kind of like X-Files-ish stuff. Like someone sees like some weird event going down in the forest with like UFOs and Bigfoot-dressed men and other politicians and stuff, and then they try to like tell that story to the newspaper, and they say they won't publish it, and then they like lose their credibility, and then they end up having to go to a newspaper like the Weekly World News, and it's like a bit of an investigation, and they're finding out all the weirdness of the world. It's not that long, like the Monkey Brain digitals are like sometimes only 10 to 12 pages, but I thought it was pretty interesting.
Well, this one's 25. Did you guys read the new Shaolin Cowboy?
No, but I recently purchased a back issue of the first issue of a Shaolin Cowboy for $1 that I haven't read.
Well, that's a good choice. Recently a new series came out by Jeff Darrow and Dave Stewart on Colors. And basically it's like a 5-minute read, but I think you buy it more for the art.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't it really action heavy? And you're watching some crazy anything. Thing going on, like he's fighting dinosaurs or whatever.
Well, this one is zombies.
Okay.
So,
that would make sense.
Yeah, it's 6 years later, and basically you see him come out of the ground, and all these zombies start coming out after him, and he has a chainsaw and this big pole that he like swings around to fight them, and there's maybe like just a 2 pages of dialogue, and other than that, it's pretty much all fighting. But it looks great. I think the zombies look too much the same. I find, like his other series, he was really good at making everyone have their own look and personality. Like, that's the fun of looking at this crazy artwork he does.
Yeah, you want to see fat zombies and tall zombies and all that type of thing? Yeah,
because everything's so detailed, you know. But I found everything was the same color and just looked too much the same. But I'll still be picking it up. It definitely will make a good hardcover if it comes out in hardcover, if you're a fan of him.
Is Andrew back?
Yeah.
Okay,
cool. If you guys don't like what I'm saying, you can just, you know, say something. And you can kick me off the call.
We thought California slid into the ocean.
I mean, you know, you could just, you know, politely suggest that I make my comments more directed. But I see, that's how we're playing it.
You didn't like your tone.
Yeah, you got something too obscure, even for Indie Noise, and that was like, that's it.
Voted off the island.
Your book sounds really cool, and I definitely want to check it out.
We thought Bigfoot got to you.
Exactly.
A wave of
Bigfoot. Well, if you guys do check it, I'll be interested to hear your thoughts.
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
It's always fun finding.
On the forum, maybe you can post a picture and where we can get it.
Yes, I will post a link at a minimum to the website. And feel free to come and leave us comments, questions.
On the Shaolin Cowboy front, it's funny you should bring it up because I have never read any Shaolin Cowboy and went back and got as much stuff as I could find of it and have been plugging through the original stuff and am really enjoying it, really enjoying it. And just picked up the first issue of the new series, and I think I'm going to hold off and wait for the collection.
Yeah, I suggest you do that too, because especially if they make like an oversized or something,
or maybe collecting it all, since there really wasn't that much out there previous. So it would make a nice big omniboo.
Mm-hmm. Did any of you read Imagine Agents?
No.
By the way,
I know that name from somewhere.
It's a Boom comic, a 4-issue series by Brian Jones and some artists with one name, Backen. I don't know. I don't like when they have one name.
When did that come out?
Too suspicious.
I just don't trust them yet.
Is that a recent?
Just came out, yeah. And basically it's Men in Black, but with imaginary friends that kids make. So when the kid grows up, the imaginary friend
has to be put down.
Nowhere to go. So they kind of put them in a community and control them. But yeah, some of them go kind of nuts. And the artist is good. Like, it suits the comic really good, but it's just neat seeing the different imaginary friends that kids have. And basically, this story is about one of them that had to go away from the kid because the kid got older, wants revenge, and so he's going after her son's imaginary kid. So that's pretty much what this is about. And then the Men in Black characters are in the background doing their police work too. But this is the indie comic I enjoyed the most in the last couple weeks. And I would strongly suggest it.
You said imaginary friend, and my mind automatically goes to like Valiant Comics and Harbinger. And I'm like, oh yeah, there was some weird imaginary friend stuff going on over there too. And then I'm like, anyways.
Oh, I thought you were going to tie it into your... about the same time of Samurai Jack was Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, which was a very similar premise. When people outgrow their imaginary friends, they go live in the Foster's Home.
I don't think I'm aware of this.
It was a cartoon. I don't know that it's ever been turned into a comic, but it was a cartoon. Maybe a little right after all that.
I thought it was Live Puppets. But yeah, it's neat seeing some of the creatures. Like there's one... imaginary friend that's like this big Raggedy Ann on steroids. It's kind of out of control. A cool mix of a millipede and like the Easter Island stones. It's pretty cool.
Why would you have to kill the imaginary friends? Couldn't you just find another dimension and like seal them away somewhere in another dimension? And then they would be like, oh, we're going to rebel. And then they come back to our world. And
maybe they don't have that technology.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
I think I'm keeping Kevin and Steve away from my imaginary friends.
It's true. They're up for blood.
Well, do you guys want one more self-published book? Or
yeah.
Shoot it out.
At the at Kamikaze, the artist alley was somewhat busy, but I've heard mixed reports. I think a lot of the small press guys, I know one guy wrote a pretty hard review of the show. But it seemed like for pop culture and kind of big comics, it was okay. But there was one artist, and every time I went by her booth, there was always a line. So I finally got lucky and waited it out and went and picked up her comic. And her name is Melissa Pagluica, Pagluica. And she has kind of this real beautiful, I'm going to say, manga-style sort of painted look. And what I liked about her was she had a comic book, unlike a lot of the people kind of in the manga world where it seems to be a lot of prints. So I picked, she had a deal where you could buy the comic and the print for a special price. So I did it, and the comic's called Above the Clouds. And the website is at cloudscomic.com. And again, I'll post links on the forum so you guys can look at this. But it's just got this nice sort of kind of like a watercolory painted look, and she's the sole person on it. And what I particularly like is it's very sparse. Like the first, as far as dialogue and words and everything, the first few pages aren't any at all. Like you don't get any text till this one, the heroine is handed a book and has text printed on it. So the first few pages are completely silent. And I like that sort of storytelling. I mean, it goes on to have dialogue and things like that, but I just thought it was a great way to introduce you to this world through these pretty images, and it's kind of like this magical place, and there's these returning warriors, and the girl has her heart set on the handsome guy, but she loses him to the more, you know, other pretty girls there, and then she ends up finding out about sort of how the world works and her role in it, and it changes up a little bit in the middle because she's reading the text of the book. So the art does a nice little shift and then it goes back to her in her world. But anyways, I'll post links to that on the forum. And it was just one of those beautiful incidences.
And what is the forum name?
The forum is Steve.
You can find the episode 330 thread in the comic book noise zone of the 11 o'clock comic boards, which is at bullpenbulletinpodcast.com/forum, or you can just search for 11 o'clock comics and you'll find the forum that way too.
And I'll post, like I said, some information on these couple of books and maybe get some stuff going. And I promise in the future, all my books won't just be, you know, self-published, super small. I'll cover some of the bigger indie books. And I do read, you know, like Image and Boom and IDW and Valiant and stuff like that. I just felt like, you know, the real indie books I also are probably one of my true favorites.
Well, we got a lot of time and a lot of podcasts in our future here, so there'll be plenty of time to cover it all. And Andrew, bon voyage, have a great vacation and visiting our pals out in Australia. We're all jealous.
Yeah, and try and pick up some Australian-only comics if you can find any.
I actually have a bunch of Australian comics from... I did a comic exchange with our friends from Australia, so they sent me some... I sent them crappy American comics, and they sent me cool Australian comics.
Nice.
I sent them a few good comics, too, but let's be honest.
You sent them, like, some Canadian comics that were actually good?
Captain Cook!
Well, I'm... You'd have to say probably the granddaddy of all independent comics is Canadian.
Well, yeah, kind of.
I mean, I think we'd be hard-pressed to... I mean, as far... At least for my age group, Cerebus was the independent big book. I don't know about... I mean, I was never a big fan. Friends of mine read it. I think I looked at a few issues. I was never a huge fan, but I don't know about you, Steve, but where I was at, that was like the big indie book.
Yeah, I mean, it was always existed. I've got about a half a dozen issues myself, but that's it. I never was a real reader.
Yeah, I've only read probably two issues. That's it.
I've never read any Cerebus Confession.
I read other Aardvark Van Am. I read like the Ms. Tree books, you know, from Max Allen Collins and Terry Beatty.
Wasn't that supposed to get a collection or something, like announced that, like, maybe two San Diegos ago or something?
Mystery? It did, yeah. I thought.
Did it?
I don't think
I remember. Oh, I saw it in previews anyway, I thought.
I don't know.
I thought they would have made you read that stuff in school, you know, show some Canadian pride.
No.
Well, you're listening to
Neil Young? Actually, in school, I had Power Man and Iron Fist.
Woohoo!
My teacher had all of those, and she'd let us read it sometimes. It was awesome.
I was going to say, we had to read some novel about life on the prairie, and I'm like, but I'm in a city. But you have to learn about the peoples on the prairie. I'm like, a prairie stuff again. But that's a whole other issue.
So Power Man and Iron Fist is Canadian?
No, but it was kind of awesome she had those anyway, though. But yeah, no. Canada does not... I hate Canada stuff.
Like, wasn't was Canuck, Cutie Bunny from that. Canada?
What?
Alpha Flight.
The Cutie Bunny comic?
I don't know Cutie Bunny.
I don't know. There was that Nelvana of the Northern Lights.
There was in the 80s, God bless the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but they created this crazy boom. You know, the geriatric jujitsu gerbils and preteen dirty jean kung fu kangaroos. But there was this one, Cutie Bunny by Josh Quagmire. I only had a few issues. I guess it was from Fantagraphics, according to this internet business.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just sort of like probably, I guess, the precursor to the modern furry scene. But just, you know, the comic I had was aping Marvel. Like, so she turned into Dark Phoenix, and, like, they had little characters that looked like all the other X-Men that were animals.
Weren't there something like the X, not X-Muties, I thought there was something else like that, too. That was, like, an indie comics publisher thing.
But for some reason, I thought that was Canadian, because you guys are a lot less uptight about sort of mature themes in comics, unlike America, where... So people would be hard pressed to believe it, but there was a lot of controversy about adult comic. There was Omaha the Cat Dancer and Cherry Pop Tart and all these books that were
just try bringing some of those things across the border. You might find some interesting inspections in your luggage.
Well, it used to be that would get people's dander up, and there would be all kinds of protests, and the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund was involved. Yeah. And it seems now almost quaint when you look at those, you know, relative to the issues facing today that someone had a problem with cartoon pictures of people having sex, but, well, it was a different time.
In a hands across the border kind of a full circle way, our childhoods were connected too, in that the George Freeman drawn Captain Canuck comics that I was reading in Banff in the late 70s, he also, George Freeman was the guy who drew some of that Elric stuff for First Comics that you were reading,
how about
Andrew.
That?
He drew a really cool Jack of Hearts miniseries for Marvel, too.
Oh, I like that one, yeah. I love Jack of Hearts.
And that's next on your podcast dial, is look for the next episode of Marvel Noise, where we'll be doing our thing over there, and then we'll come back here and we'll do our thing here. With you.
And us.
And me.
And hopefully Andrew.
Yes.
If he doesn't get lost down under.
Yeah, watch out for snakes.
I might try to
ruse with boomerangs.
Don't step in a billabong.
Remember, that's a prison island. Don't trust them.
Lost myself.